Hello and welcome to Monkey Club with Chris and Chris, a journey through the history of simian cinema. I'm Christian Larson.
I'm Chris Mattiello.
And today we have a special guest with us, Ms. Kara O'Regan. Kara, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys.
And this is episode 11. We'll be discussing 1987's Going Bananas. And Kara, regular listeners to the Cage Club Podcast Network, and I hope that all of our listeners are regular listeners to all of the other podcasts, will know you from your very insightful discussions of the Bill and Ted films for Keanu Club. What inspired you to get on board for this episode, Going Bananas?
I like the word bananas a lot, and so I thought it might be fun. I was wrong. I was very wrong.
Do you still have that opinion after hearing a devil monkey repeatedly say the word bananas?
Banana!
Maybe. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how much of a presence it has in my vocabulary going forward.
Banana!
Not sure yet.
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever be able to hear the word banana ever again without thinking of this horrifying devil monkey saying it over and over again.
Banana!
This movie is a Canon Films picture, and if you're familiar with Canon Films, you know that they were a B-movie factory in the 80s. They're pretty much responsible for launching the careers of Chuck Norris and Charles Bronson, not to mention Jean-Claude Van Damme. They did the Death Wish series, they did the He-Man Masters of the Universe film.
Superman 4.
They just cranked out a whole bunch of crap in the 80s, and this was one of their rare forays into family entertainment. And the interesting thing about this that I found watching it was that it was written by a guy named Menachem Golan, who was the mastermind behind Canon Films. He was a middle-aged Israeli man for whom English was a second language. And you can tell by the dialogue and the humor in this film, it reminded me a lot of back before it was really played out. I was a huge fan of the Ali G show and Borat in particular. And there's one segment where he's telling a joke to someone.
I have a joke. There is a chair. The chair walk with the shoes. La 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 la, you walk on the street, the chair is walking.
Right.
Yes.
Well, it's a funny image.
And that's what a lot of the humor in this comes off as. It's like a foreign person trying desperately to portray humor.
I could see that. There's so much in this movie that doesn't feel... I mean, you're saying it's a man who's incapable of like portraying humor due to a language barrier. I feel like this movie may have actually been written by someone who is not from Earth, actually.
Yeah, it definitely reminds me a lot of The Room, because Tommy Wiseau, not only is there a cultural barrier, but it seems like he's from another planet and he has no idea how humans are supposed to interact. And a lot of this comes across like that.
Can I tell a quick story about why I think I hated this movie so much?
Of course.
Okay, so I have this very clear memory, and I don't know when this movie came out, so I'll just say I was born in 86, so it should put me at maybe around like 7 or 8, I guess.
You were 1 year old.
Oh, no, yeah, no, no, sorry, not, I apologize, not this film, but this film I'm going to reference, which okay. Reminded me of this one, a movie called Baby's Day Out.
He was mommy's little angel.
Baby Bink is not a regular baby.
And daddy's pride and joy.
Bye-bye. Whoa, bye-bye. Bye-bye.
But Baby Bink was born. So when the big city called, Baby Bink had to answer.
So when you're like 5, 6, 7 and younger than that, you don't realize that movies can be bad. And you just like everything that is on the screen in front of you because you're a child and you're an idiot and your brain is not fully formed. You know, your brain isn't quite a real brain yet, and for, you know, various reasons. So
sure.
I was really big into Home Alone when I was very young. I loved that movie. And there was a period of time, probably, you know, 2 or 3 years around that first Home Alone movie, where there was clones of it coming out. And I have very distinct memories of seeing Blank Check and Richie Rich in the theaters because I loved them. And my parents were just like, yeah, this will shut them up for 2 hours. Let's do it. And then I saw, this is probably the earliest memory I have, was seeing Baby's Day Out in theaters with my mother. Also a movie that has a scene with an ape in it that is an abomination. And I'm watching it in the theater, and I'm sitting there, and I'm just going, this isn't good.
From John Hughes, the creator of Home Alone.
I live.
Baby's Day Out.
I didn't know movies could be bad, and I spent the entire runtime of that movie slowly, like, having my innocence sapped away. As a child, a row in front of me, who's maybe like a year younger, is laughing hysterically at every single thing that happens in Baby's Day Out. And just like 6 or 7 year old me is sitting there fuming as I start to understand that everything I thought I knew was wrong. And I think that really set the course for how I look at film in my entire life. And this movie gave me flashbacks to being that kid and watching that movie, because this is a movie that is made not for children, but for babies.
Yeah, it's true. They, like, all of the humor in this movie is based around senseless violence, which I think Baby's Day Out and, to a lesser extent, Home Alone kind of capitalized on. I have a very similar story, but I was about 12 and I saw Ace Ventura Goes to Africa, or whatever the sequel was.
When Nature Calls. Love those puns, right?
And I was like, this is terrible. I know I'm supposed to be thinking this is hilarious, but it's just a guy talking out of his ass. There's nothing funny about this.
Did the casual African racism of this movie give you flashbacks to that moment?
There's nothing casual about the racism in this movie, and I'm sure we'll get to that. But before we do, Kara, with all of our guests, we like to play a little game called 12 Monkeys. And this is the point where we ask our guests to sum up the plot of this film in 12 words or less.
Okay.
So take a breath. Take a moment.
In African tale, Fievel goes bananas.
Wow, you saved half the words.
Yeah.
Wow. That is probably our most impressive round of 12 Monkeys to date.
Yes, you hold the title. You're the Ric Flair of 12 Monkeys.
It's a good thing I came up with that yesterday, otherwise I would have panicked and not been able to think of anything.
I mean, there are some parallels between Fievel Goes West and this movie.
Future guests are going to have to step up their game, and they can't just say fuck as their description.
Yeah.
Which would have been totally acceptable for this movie.
Yeah. I mean, that was my number two.
If I were the guest, I would have just said fuck 12 times. Been done with it. So let's get into it. Going Bananas starts off with a young man who is the son of a senator, I think?
Mm-hmm. An American senator.
Yeah. And he's being dropped off in Africa with his bodyguard, a guy named Big Bad Joe, played by Dom DeLuise, who is big, but not so much bad. He's actually very incompetent and unpleasant. And the captain of the ship that drops them off, right off the bat, is like, oh, welcome to Africa. They're probably going to try to eat you. Ha 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 ha.
Within the first 5 minutes, there's, I think, 3 cannibalism jokes. So, like, right off the bat. There's lots of cannibalism jokes.
This movie turning into Cannibal Holocaust, a better movie.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I love, Kara, that the word jokes, I could almost hear the quotation marks around it when you said it. And they arrive in the land of Tangola, this generic African state. And they show up, and they're met by J.J. Walker from Good Times, '70s sitcom.
Dynamite.
And yes, Mr. Dynamite. And he's plowing through this African marketplace, knocking things over. I suppose it's setting him up to be incompetent, but he's really the most competent of the group. And he picks them up and takes them on this safari through Wamba Zamba Land, which sounds like something my grandfather would call something African.
Yeah. Well, granddad's a little racist, but, you know, he grew up at a weird time. Let's just give it to him. He's calling stuff Wamba. Yeah. He's calling hip-hop Wamba Zamba music. Like, let's let 80-year-old granddad have that one.
Well, 80-year-old granddad wrote this movie.
Pretty much.
And everything is big. Everyone's yelling at each other. Everyone's falling down. Like, Menachem Golan, the guy who wrote this movie, like, he just thinks that violence and falling down and screaming is what makes kids laugh. And I guess it does to a certain extent.
There's also a ton of non-diegetic sound effects. A lot of bonks on the head that sound like bonk. And, like, people falling, and it's like, whoop, 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 whoop.
Don't shoot him!
Oh, my goodness!
And it's very much from the Tom and Jerry school of comedy. Yeah.
And they go on this safari, and there's a lot of really nice safari footage. I'll give it that. But it's what the Red Letter Media guys would call shooting the rodeo, which is that, like, they need to fill time. So they just show footage of scenery and footage of animals.
Did either like the Wikipedia or the IMDb Tribune, did any of them say where this movie was filmed?
Obviously they went to Africa.
That's crazy to me. That's just like, that's what this money, I can't believe this wasn't filmed in like Six Flags Great Adventures Safari Park or something.
I mean, I honestly wouldn't put it past them. I think that that's definitely a possibility, but it seems like it might have been in Africa. They at least pulled that much off.
Yeah. Early on, it's very clear that no one gives a shit in this movie because everyone save the child, who I believe is also the kid from Over the Top.
Yes, yes he is.
Everyone except him is doing an accent. There's more slipping in and out here than there is in, like, a gangbang. Like, they're doing an accent,
dear.
And then they're just, Jimmy Walker's just talking like he's on Good Times, and Dom DeLuise is just Dom DeLuise, and then he's doing this weird, foppy British accent, and then he's back out of it. No one cares. No one can give even enough of a shit to do their accent for more than three lines consecutively.
Yeah, and Dom DeLuise, who is always a very welcome presence in a lot of movies, the Cannonball Run movies, a lot of early Mel Brooks movies, he's just thoroughly unlikable in this. He's grumpy, he's a fuck-up on every possible level, and when they go on this safari, right off the bat, first of all, he's panicking. He's like, oh no, there's dangerous animals all around. And then he's taking a nap in the van, and there's a lion sitting above him, and he's using the lion's tail as he's sleeping to, like, wipe his mouth and stuff. And, oh my god, just embarrassing.
So Dom DeLuise's character is very nervous, very anal retentive, very prissy. And the way I could describe it for people who are listening to this and didn't watch the movie, which... normally, I would recommend people watch the movie. No one should watch this movie. Imagine C-3PO in Star Wars, right? And this is the only time this movie will probably ever be compared to Star Wars in any way. Imagine the C-3PO character. He's great in that kind of tertiary role as this kind of Rosencrantz or Guildenstern kind of guy in the background commentating. Imagine they just made C-3PO Han Solo. And you have to deal with that. You have to deal with that the entire movie and, like, piloting the trip. It's a nightmare, yeah. And it's annoying, and I don't know if it's supposed to come from the kid's perspective where every adult is an idiot, but it's intolerable.
Intolerable is definitely a word that I would use for this. That's a really, really, really good comparison. We haven't yet discussed the monkey character, but when we do, there's also a Star Wars link there, so I'll just set the ground for that right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're about to meet the monkey. On this safari, Dom DeLuise's character, Big Bad Joe, continues to do stupid shit. He has lunch in the savannah with, like, champagne and a fruit basket, and animals come and steal his food, and he gets all upset about that, and that's supposed to be funny. And then they meet the monkey. The kid frees it because it's tangled in a tree, and it is the most horrifying thing you've ever seen. It's played by a guy named Deep Roy, who you might remember as playing every Oompa Loompa in the Tim Burton...
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Charlie and the... Yes, yes.
All 165 Oompa
Loompas. Yes, and he was also in the third season of Eastbound and Down.
I'm gonna cut your fucking dick, and maybe they'll put a fucking smile on your fucking face.
Maybe. Maybe we will cut this motherfucker's balls off.
You know what? I can cut off your titties.
The Mexico missive.
Titty, titty, bang, bang.
He will titty, titty, bang, bang you. He will fucking cut your tits off right here.
To him, my donkey. It's all I have.
Fuck your donkey, bitch.
He is slathered with prosthetics and making the most horrifying screeching sounds. So, Kara, what were your first impressions of this monkey?
Well, I did know already that it was a human dressed as a monkey, as opposed to just, say, a monkey.
Yes.
So my expectation was that he was going to look a little different. All things considered, I don't think he's actually that horrifying looking for a person dressed as a monkey. But I did do like a quick IMDb search of him, and that Star Wars connection that I was talking about, he was R2-D2's body double. He was Yoda's double in a couple scenes. He played Droopy McCool, which is one of the aliens that are playing in the cantina, and was also an Ewok in the third film.
Follow the yellow brick road.
Yeah, maybe I'll find the Ewok village you came from.
You got it wrong, buddy. I'm Yoda.
I don't know. I can't keep the numbers straight, but like the original, the third one Jedi, and the original.
Yes, yes. Yeah, yes. Return of the Jedi.
George was really good at stretching his little person quota.
Yes.
He also played Teeny Weenie in The NeverEnding Story. That was the guy who like rode the little racing snail.
I have to respectfully disagree. I think that the monkey in this is probably the most horrifying monkey that we've seen so far, that I've seen so far. And as Chris was saying before, Ed, the baseball-playing monkey, which was a combination of a human in a monkey suit and a mechanical monkey, was pretty horrifying, but Jesus Christ.
Ooh. And I mean, spoilers, but I don't think the monkey would have been that terrifying if it didn't start talking like a human at a certain point.
Yeah, just when you think it couldn't get any more I feel like horrifying is the best possible word to describe him. But
they could have put this in the lounge in Twin Peaks, and like the monkey could have been like, "That gum you like is coming back in style," and it would have been it would have been even more horrifying.
Well, before we get ahead of ourselves, Big Bad Joe and the monkey meet, and the monkey knocks one of his teeth out, I think.
No,
I think he knocks his own tooth out. Like, just clumsily knocks his tooth out.
Jesus, I already blocked out the dentist scene. Oh, no. I don't think I laughed because it was funny. I think I laughed because my brain was shutting down, and it was a defense mechanism, like how some people laugh at funerals. It's a hand-cranked kind of powered drill, and they show that it's being cranked by a large woman on a bicycle, because that's funny. And that's the joke. And then they do another joke with her, which, like, actually might have been a joke. It's hard to tell in this movie what is actually intended to be a joke and what is just someone who doesn't understand humans writing a story that's supposed to be a comedy. But Dom DeLuise's character demands Novocaine, and then immediately it cuts to that same woman shooting a blow dart into his neck to to put him under. And
yes.
That was the point in the movie where I switched the YouTube speed from 1.25 to 1.5.
I didn't even think to do that. And now I'm really so mad that I did not.
I was at 2 by the end of the movie.
A bit of a high-pitched voice might have actually made this movie a little more entertaining or more horrifying. Who knows? So Big Bad Joe gets his tooth back through a drill and Novocaine and whatever. And they're driving out of Wamba Zamba Land, and the monkey has tagged along. And on the way out, there are a bunch of angry guards who, again, are just screaming and angry, and that's supposed to be funny. and the monkey beats the guard over the head, and they get dragged to African jail. And,
which I think you actually skipped over this kind of, like, I don't know if it's like a B plot necessarily, because it's also the plot of the movie, but this like other aspect of the guy from the circus and the police chief who are conspiring capture the monkey, because when the characters are introduced, the monkey isn't in the movie yet, but the police chief or captain or whatever, who is a white guy, goes to I think that's like important to note that absolutely. This guy is like very clearly a colonizer. So he goes to this other white guy who like runs a circus, and the guy is like, bring me weird animals or whatever, and he tries
I could get a talking monkey,
right? So he tries to like give the police captain money, and he was like, no, we have a very strict code of conduct in this country, no tips. But then the circus guy corrects him and says, that's not a tip, it's a bribe. And the captain, this actually did make me laugh, he smiles, takes the money, and says, oh, that's different.
Yeah,
so that happens earlier in the movie. And so in this scene, when they get captured, they're being captured by the police force, who is after them, and this magical monkey that they have, who's not actually magical, he just is gifted, I guess.
Yeah, the police chief is actually played by the guy who is the police chief in the Pink Panther movies. Mm. Who is constantly frustrated by the bumbling Inspector Clouseau.
I was also...
As played by...
Yeah, I was also convinced that he was in Spice World, but that does not seem to be the case.
No, that was Meatloaf.
I know who Meatloaf is. I know Meatloaf was in Spice World.
This was the one moment of the film where I feel like anyone who's listened to Monkey Club for this long knows that sometimes I try to see if there's any kind of, death of the author kind of subtext to these movies. And that's where they start hitting skip forward on their podcast app. And this was the one moment where I was like, okay, they're like gonna talk about like this British colonialism of Africa, because there is something there that like, there's a statement to be made, whether he realized it or not, that like the chief of the guard, who's a white guy, he also runs a circus? Question mark.
They're two.
Well,
different
no,
people.
He's
they
working.
Are. Holy shit!
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Disclaimer: I was super drunk for this movie, and I'm super drunk right now. So, to be for this movie. You seriously have to be for this movie.
Yeah,
they're different people, really.
The police chief and the head of the circus are two different.
Well,
people,
I know the police chief is, but the guy who runs. The white guy who's always in the office is a different guy than the white guy who runs the circus? Oh, shit.
Yeah. The white guy who runs the circus has some inexplicably Italian name.
Palermo.
Palermo.
Which may not be Italian. I mean, so let's bring in some reality here. As far as the history of colonization of Africa, a lot of times people just think of it as the Dutch and the English, but also it was colonized by Portuguese and Italians. So the country in this movie is made up. It's called Tangola, but there is a real life country called Angola.
Which I thought it was the whole time.
Right, but it is not. Not to be confused. And Angola in real life was colonized by the Portuguese. So it may not be Italian. It might actually be Portuguese, but maybe not. I could also just be making that up.
Mm-hmm. I actually had the same thought, mostly because I thought this was Angola the whole time.
Well, that is probably a lot more thought than Menachem Golan put into writing this movie. So,
we've justified this movie's existence, unfortunately.
So, they get taken into jail, and they get let out, and they immediately go to a fancy French restaurant, which... Like, I get that, like, a bunch of wackos going to a fancy French restaurant is sort of a trope of a comedy movie. But why is there a 5-star French restaurant in the middle of this African marketplace? I don't understand. And you've got everything about it. You've got, like, the waiter being like, we do not serve the blah, 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 you know, and...
Well, because there's this misunderstanding that happens. Dom DeLuise says that he's hungry enough to eat a horse, and the waiter doesn't understand that that's an American expression. That just means you're super hungry, and gets, like, very upset that he wants to eat a horse, and then somebody says something about eating a zebra, and he gets, like, even more upset. Like, it just is a weird escalation of a misunderstanding.
Yeah, and on top of everything else, the monkey is in drag at this point.
That's right.
they decided that, you know, the only way to make a monkey less conspicuous would be to dress it up like an old lady. And they bring the monkey into the restaurant. All kinds of wacky hijinks ensue.
Here's two things I never need again in my life. Is French waiter humor and animals in drag humor. And I have a really bad feeling we're going to get both before this podcast is over.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And the police chief and the circus guy are having, they're eating an entire cake in a booth.
It wasn't supposed to be an entire cake.
The monkey keeps stealing places.
A motif of this movie is monkeys stealing food.
Has that been a motif in other monkey films? Because I feel like that's a fairly run-of-the-mill monkey trope.
Yeah, monkeys love sneaking food. The police chief and the circus guy is saying that he will pay $100,000 for a talking monkey. And that kind of sets, like, as this movie goes on, the obsession that the police chief has with getting this monkey is really kind of confusing, but I guess since there's $100,000 on the line, it makes sense.
You can see why I was confused about them being different people, because this police chief is very excited about the talking monkey, and then the circus guy, like, that's his headliner of the circus is the talking monkey. So, like, it doesn't really make sense why the police chief is all excited about the talking monkey.
I mean, the police chief is going to get the monkey for the circus guy and get $100,000 in the process, but...
Also, the monkey isn't speaking English yet, I don't think.
This is true.
He's not technically a talking monkey yet.
We do... You know, you asked if food stealing was a thing that happens regularly, a trope, if you will, if you're an internet kind of person, in the monkey films... That is less so than humans kissing monkeys, which also happens, because a drunk fellow thinks that the in-drag monkey is a cute lady and has a dance and a kiss.
Hey, baby! Come on, dance with me, eh? You are too kind. Beautiful!
Yeah, that... I mean...
I hate this movie. I hate
it.
There
are so many... Yeah, so do I. We're united in our hatred of this film. It's a monkey dressed like a lady, and he's covered in hair, and he's like 4 feet tall, but somehow, I mean, they make a point of showing that this drunken Frenchman is very drunk, but I've been drunk before, and I'm not going to make out with a monkey.
Don't kink shame. If you've got a thing for hirsute little people, that's cool.
You know what? If that's this guy's thing, then more power to him. He was probably hanging out in this inexplicable French restaurant in the middle of an African village, hoping that someday a sexy little monkey would come in that door. And finally it happened, and his dreams
Good
came
for
true.
Him.
But all hell breaks loose once the police chief finds out that there's a monkey in there, and once he sees that it's Big Bad Joe and the little kid, and everyone starts beating the shit out of each other, like, indiscriminately. It's not even like the bad guys are getting beaten up by the good guys, or vice versa. It's everyone is beating the shit out of each other in wacky ways. And this is another example of how violence is just... pretty much humor.
Yeah, I feel like this guy grew up on the screenwriter grew up on the Three Stooges. It's a very Three Stooges-esque moment where snooty people are getting pies in the face. and et cetera, et cetera. And this is a terrible movie.
And they get thrown into jail, but this time it's like a dungeon. And you have all these like emaciated African extras chained to the walls. And it's really, again, another example of it being very disturbingly racist. And this is the point where we learn that the monkey can speak English, kind of.
This actually, I really enjoyed this scene. It made me, this was like the only one that I actually kind of like laughed through. Like once they get to the banana part, where they're like teaching the monkey how to say banana. And then he does, and then he keeps saying it over and over again.
Banana, he said banana. Did you hear him? Did you hear him? You in there? Did you hear him? I heard him. Wait a minute.
Banana.
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 He said banana. All right, everybody, listen. Quiet. This is your dream. This might be a dream.
Banana.
What do you have in the morning with cereal?
Banana?
I think by this point in the movie, I was just like deliriously so ready for it to be over that it made me laugh. And I actually stopped taking notes after this scene.
Yeah, this is the point in the movie where I had this revelation. And here's my theory. I mentioned previously on this podcast that the monkey movies of the 80s came from people seeing E.T. and going, mm-hmm. Well, what else can we do that's like kind of humanoid-ish, but not exactly, and is cute and adorable, and we can make it do human things? And they're like, well, if not an alien, what about a monkey? Does a long line of coke, and then they make a script. This movie is like they didn't see E.T. and did that. They saw fucking Nuki, if you know that movie. The African E.T. exploitation film, which is trying to do E.T.
Two space travelers...
Rico, no!
...are separated.
I don't know if I find out to do.
One is recovered.
I want this creature alive.
The other must find his way on a strange planet. Confronting the perils of the jungle.
What does the name of men you look for?
America.
America? No, America is the country where I come from.
What's this? It's a ancient form of spaceship.
It will take extraterrestrial spirit and courage, along with the help of two native brothers, to reunite these space travelers.
Nuki!
In the tradition of E.T. and Close Encounters of a Third Kind,
what in the world?
Comes a magical adventure, Nuki.
It's like this guy saw that and went, yeah, let's do that with a monkey. This is the exact scene where I went, no, I broke during the scene.
The fact that they go so, forgive the term, apeshit, over the fact that this monkey is saying the word banana, like, they go crazy. Dom DeLuise is, like, flipping out. Like, I get it, a monkey saying the word banana is pretty impressive, but it's like, they're reacting to it in the way that audiences reacted to E.T. making Elliot's bike fly over the chasm. It's supposed to be this amazing, magical moment. And it's like, it's not really that impressive. And it reminded me, because when we, during the course of Monkey Club, I did some research into Coco the gorilla and her sign language. And a lot of critics say that her sign language, it's sort of like how a cat purrs. People think that cats purring means something when really it's just a way to get a reaction from humans. And they read a lot into it because they feel like they should read into it. And this banana thing, he's just saying the word banana over and over again. It's not, that doesn't, I wasn't impressed. I was more freaked out.
I mean, well, so in this scene, he only says banana. But it's almost like this scene, like the banana is, he like breaks through to human language and all of a sudden has access to all of these other words in subsequent scenes that like was quite bizarre.
Yeah, this was the Rosetta Stone moment.
Yeah, well.
Right, yeah.
I mean, his vocabulary isn't that complicated, because the boy and the monkey escape from jail, and they go on this bonding montage in Wonga Bonga Land, or whatever it is, where they look at the scenery, and they hug, and the monkey beats the kid over the head a few times, and that's supposed to be endearing.
Is this where the kid falls off a goddamn cliff?
And the monkey
cliff?
Says, well, it's about to happen. But the monkey, first, he says, like, Bonzo love Ben! That's the only other, yeah, that's like the only other thing that the monkey can say.
Bonzo loves Ben!
Ben loves Bonzo.
By the way, the yes, monkey is named Bonzo, just like bedtime for Bonzo, because both of those movies were inspired by a book that was written, like, in the 20s, I think. So the Bonzo in this movie is a relative of the Bonzo from bedtime.
See episode 3 with guest star Rob Ricci.
During their little African savannah montage, the boy falls into a chasm, and a fucking scorpion crawls on his
face. Four scorpions crawl on this kid.
And then there are, like, several more scorpions around.
Jesus Christ! If you've watched Electric Boogaloo, the documentary about Canon Films, you'll see that Menachem Golan has no, like, he doesn't care about the safety of his actors. He used his own children in films in very dangerous situations. The only concern he has is the finished product. I can't imagine being a little kid and being in a movie and having scorpions put on your face. Like, scorpions are scary. I have friends who live in the Southwest, and they tell me that, like, every now and then they'll walk into their bathroom and they'll see a scorpion on the floor, like we would see, you know, like a mouse or a roach or something. Jesus Christ! Scorpions are really scary. Yeah. And I'm just picturing Menachem Golan, like, pouring scorpions on this little boy, being like, it's okay, it's for the movie, yes, yes, going to be good movie.
There's no way that they didn't just throw scorpions on this kid, right? They had one trainer who was in there, and the guy was like, yep, you just stay still, and these scorpions won't sting you. And they just threw them on this kid. There's no way these are fake scorpions.
Oh, no. I mean, this kid just must have been really desperate to be in a movie. I don't know if this is before or after Over the Top, which is a vastly superior film. Turn off this podcast right now and watch Over yes, the Top. It's great.
Better gorilla acting from Sylvester Stallone as well.
Now that's a gorilla that I would watch in anything. He's dying in the bottom of the chasm. The monkey rescues him. Dom DeLuise and J.J. Walker show up. They bring him back to the hospital, where a bunch of nuns take care of him. And then the evil white police chief shows up, and he demands to see the kid. And the nun says, oh, you are a horrible bully. And he says, you are an ugly witch. And they go in, and this is where the police chief sees the monkey talking, because the monkey's saying, Bonzo love Ben! Bonzo love Ben! And at this point, the police chief orders the entire police force of Wongo Bongo Land or whatever to capture the monkey. And it's amazing that he's using all these police resources to capture a monkey. But again, I guess he's got $100,000 on the line, so.
Which I looked it up, and it would be approximately $209,000 today.
Well, again, those are in Wongo Bongo dollars, so, you know, who knows. And the monkey gets sold to the circus. The kid is all sad about the monkey being gone, but then they see that the circus is in town, so the three of them go to the circus, and they see Bonzo, and the circus guy brings Bonzo out to count to 10 for the audience, like as if that's going to be like a huge deal. Again, a talking monkey is a big deal. And also, the fact that a circus is a thing in, like, an African village? I don't know. I feel like they have other things going on.
Kara, have you ever seen the movie Congo?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to pose this question to both of you. You guys are both coaches, and your team is made up of extremely intelligent gorillas. I don't know what league this is. It's a post-apocalyptic nightmare, I'm sure. But you have the first round pick. Do you take which talking gorilla do you take? this one or Amy from Congo? Who's your first round pick?
Amy, every time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Amy enjoys a good martini.
Yes.
She's much less horrifying than Bonzo in this movie.
It's unanimous. Definitely. If we have to do Talking Gorillas, it's Amy. And God, I think I said it there, too. I should shut the fuck up during podcasts, because I say it can never get worse in so many of these episodes, and it always does.
I mean, I haven't seen Congo probably not since it came out, maybe? I don't know. A long time, regardless. And I don't remember wanting to die during that one, whereas during the viewing of Going Bananas, I did in fact contemplate my mortality quite seriously, because I just wanted it all to be over.
Oh yeah, if you said, would you rather be dead forever or watch Going Bananas again, put me in the fucking ground.
Another interesting thing in this scene is that as the monkey is counting to 10, the circus guy is whipping the monkey. And it made me think of circuses. Growing up, animals were whipped constantly. The elephants, the lions especially. And people thought nothing of it. And nowadays, they're kind of phasing out that aspect of circuses for many, many reasons. But this really brought back the brutality of that, even though it was a small man in a monkey suit. But still, it was pretty brutal. And the trio of the little boy and Tom DeLouise and J.J. Abrams, they decide that they're going to dress like clowns to get Bonzo out of the circus. And they do. And another crazy set piece ensues, kind of like
the only reason to watch this movie is if you are... if your PhD is from Clown College and your specialty is mid-1980s low-budget circuses, because we get to see all of it. Every single moment of this circus is just in this movie, because they got to the point where they were like, oh, hey, we got 40 minutes left. How are we going to fill this? I don't know. Show a whole fucking circus?
Yeah, there are acrobats. There are strong men. There are clowns, and they're all beating the shit out of each other, set to wacky music and cartoon sound effects. And they escape from the circus, and again, the brutality of the circus guy and the police chief. At one point, the circus guy screams, "Kill the boy!" Like, what?
Carrie, you got...
Hey,
you got off kind of easily with your 12 monkeys, so why don't you describe some of this circus scene?
Oh, God. So to be honest, I was not watching super intently. I don't actually remember.
How dare you?
That is the correct position to take.
Yeah, I don't actually remember much of the circus other than, like, the horrible animal abuse and the Benny Hill kind of nature of the escape scene. But beyond that, I got nothing. Oh, we got
the whole Flying Graysons with the trapeze.
Oh my God, yeah, the trapeze artist. That was actually quite impressive. Who was on the it was one of the characters. Who actually was doing the trapeze?
I can tell you that for a moment there's a Dom DeLuise stunt double who is about 20 years younger than Dom DeLuise who's doing trapeze with a terrible fake beard.
Okay, yeah.
A lot of this movie reminded me of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, which I revisited recently. And his ether-fueled night at the circus-themed casino, really, there were a lot of parallels here, because I felt like I had just sniffed a rag full of ether watching this scene. And they escape, of course, and the police and the circus guy are firing guns indiscriminately at them, and they get into an airplane, and they take off, and... I believe Bonzo is flying the airplane. Was I right about that, or was that just the ether?
I don't even know.
I have no idea. Let's say Bonzo was flying the airplane.
It makes it better. It draws parallels to Project X. Sure, the monkey was flying the fucking plane. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, because monkeys are very good at flying planes. And also... They fly the plane back to the port where the boat is waiting, and they get to the port. they say goodbye. Dom DeLuise now actually likes the monkey. There's a heartfelt goodbye between all of them. There's a really nice scene where Dom DeLuise tells J.J. Abrams, J.J. Walker, if you're ever in New York, you should come visit.
If you're ever in New York City, please look us up. We'd love to take you on a safari of Central Park.
I don't think so, Mr. Big Bad Joe. Because what I heard is that Central Park is much more dangerous than Dangola.
Mo, you're probably right.
And there's a close-up on the monkey's face as he says goodbye. And it has burned itself into my nightmares forever.
And at that point, you know, we've done a couple of these on Monkey Club. The scene where the precocious kid says goodbye to the monkey. That's it. That's the end of the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nope. Nope. We're not that lucky here. You've got 10 more minutes to fill.
What happens? Maybe I have checked out at this point, but...
He says goodbye to the monkey, and then there's a chase scene.
Yeah, the police guy and the circus guy. Well, I don't know if it's both of them. Maybe it's just one of them. Somebody pulls up to the port just as they're like about to leave. So they see that they're trying to capture the monkey. And then somehow the monkey winds up on the boat, but I don't remember how.
Well, they chase them through. Wait, hold on a second. I was hammered and watching this at 2x speed, and I'm the one who remembers the most of this movie? This is bullshit.
You're doing God's work, Chris.
There's a chase. Oh, I better have punched my fucking ticket to heaven for this one. They chase the monkey through the marketplace again. The monkey smashes some sort of fruit over the white dude's head. I just truncated that. That's like 8 minutes. And then the monkey makes a slow motion leap onto the boat to get back with Dom DeLuise and the kid.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And of course, the circus guy drives his car into the river.
Which might be a Confederate flag car, if I remember correctly.
It was decorated with stars and stripes. So, okay. You know, there might have been some kind of metaphor there about colonialism.
Oh, fuck you. No, there wasn't. We've been over this. No.
Yes, no. Oh, boy. So that was going bananas.
Fuck.
I know. I apologize to both of you for having put you through that. But before we wrap things up, we have a few little segments we like to do. Kara, we'd like to play a little game called Monkey Business.
Oh, this would be a good one.
If you were to pitch a sequel to Going Bananas, what would the plot be?
First off, if anyone pitched a sequel to this fucking movie, they would be the worst human being to ever exist.
Yeah.
But we're living in a hypothetical world where this movie was successful. So,
yeah. I love your exasperated sigh before you go into this. That's great.
What's that, like, Tim Allen movie where he has some child that, like, shows up in New York City, like, from the jungle?
Jungle to Jungle.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, I know that.
Yeah, it would be like that movie, only with a monkey and Tim Allen. But not Tim Allen, it'd be Dom DeLuise. I don't know, okay. I mean...
Upgrade.
I mean, maybe also actually doing an African tale, Bible Goes Bananas, like taking the monkey out of Africa, bringing him to the United States, and seeing what hilarity ensues when he's, you know, in this completely different culture and there's other humans and stuff. I don't know. Please don't take a sequel.
No, Bottom line is there should never, ever, ever be a sequel to this. But yeah, I see where you're coming from. It would involve a lot of loud screaming and violence in lieu of humor, but just in different situations.
Right.
Yeah, that's all. Like, honestly, we don't need to talk about this anymore because there shouldn't be a sequel. There should never be a sequel. The last segment we want to do is what we always do, and I feel like this is going to be rough. It's a segment called Apes versus Humans, where we determine sort of a panel discussion who was the better performance in this movie. Was it the monkey or was it the humans?
I mean, it's an interesting question in this film specifically because the monkey is in fact a human.
Oh god, no. Yeah. Don't so tell them that. You're going behind the curtain.
Yeah.
I can't know that the monkey was a human.
Quickly, before I answer that question, I think we actually skipped over the story of how Deep Roy got cast in this film as a monkey.
Oh, yes. I was going to bring that up later, but...
Oh, okay. You can cut that part out.
No.
Now is the time.
No, go ahead.
Now is the time.
Go ahead.
So, I did not know that Clint Eastwood was actually in a couple films with an orangutan. His name was Clyde, the orangutan, and he was Clint Eastwood's co-star in Any Which Way You Can and Every Which Way But Loose, which I hope both of those are going to be in the Monkey Club canon.
They certainly are.
So they were originally going to cast that orangutan, and I guess because of like contract stuff, I actually don't remember anything else about this except for the question that Menachem Golan asked about the monkey.
Well, Menachem Golan, he wanted to do a monkey movie. So he called Clyde into his office, and Clyde and his handlers showed up. And he pitched this movie, and all the onlookers said that he was pitching it almost directly to the monkey.
That sounds right.
Not so much to the handlers or the publicist.
It's only polite, you know. You don't want to be talking about the monkey like he's not even in the room.
No, of course not. And at one point, he said to one of Clyde's female publicists, and Kara, you probably know the question.
Yeah. Would you fuck this monkey?
Holy shit.
Which I have to say, like, as a woman who's been in the workforce, I have gotten questions that are not that different from that as a working woman in America.
I wouldn't think that a criteria of a monkey in a monkey movie was to be fuckable, but...
Well, you haven't seen Ed, I guess.
Maybe we should add another game onto our podcast.
No, you stop it.
Would you fuck
you
this
shut
monkey?
Your mouth.
Would you fuck this monkey? Oh, God. All right. Well,
yes, every episode,
anyways.
Retroactively, yes.
Oh, but I never asked answered the original question of who is better.
It could be any of the humans that you're comparing the monkey to.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and say the monkey was the better actor. I'm a huge fan of Deep Roy's work. I think that he was able to transcend his species for this movie. Obviously, there's a tremendous amount of suspension of disbelief that needs to happen to even almost enjoy this movie. But I think, you know, all things considering what he had to work with and all of the nonsense that takes place in this movie, Deep Roy's work as a monkey is it's not bad.
I was impressed by Deep Roy's work. Like I said before, Dom DeLuise is usually an incredibly endearing and hilarious character in everything he's in, and in this, he was just completely unlikable. This movie did the impossible of making Dom DeLuise a horrible, unlikable asshole.
Well, so that's interesting. Maybe he was actually the best actor in this, since he was able to transcend his usual typecasting.
Maybe he saw this as an opportunity to play against type. But I don't think so. I mean, he was supposed to be a bumbling, fat idiot, and he kind of did that, but in the process, he was just so unlikable and so grating. J.J. Walker was a offensive African stereotype.
Which, interestingly, like, the first couple scenes that I saw of him in this movie, I was like, oh, like, he's obviously doing Eddie Murphy in Coming to America.
Good morning, my neighbors!
Hey, fuck you!
Yes! Yes! Fuck you, too!
Allow me to introduce myself. I am Muzambo, chairman of the board of the Muzambo Tourist and Safari Corporation of Angola.
And then I realized that movie actually came out a year after this, so maybe Eddie Murphy was actually doing J.J. Walker in this movie.
Oh, wow. I would love to think that.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I'm going to
But
I want to throw my hat in the ring on this, though, before you answer this, because I want to try to... The only thing I had a strong opinion on this movie, as I was watching it, was Apes vs. Humans and who would win this. And I want to pitch you guys on the fact that the best actor in this movie was the African chief of police, the larger gentleman who had, I think, he was an offensive African stereotype. I will absolutely throw that out there right off the bat. He was the larger police chief, and 95 or so percent of this movie is reaction shots of humans reacting to what is going on, and most of the time it is this fake laughter.
Can't you see the monkey is deeply in love with you?
And it happens off the kid, it happens off Julia Walker, it happens off Don Louise, because they're in most of the movie. And every time it comes off extremely disingenuous, and it's just a close-up of someone fake laughing into a camera. But that...
So are you saying that guy
was so good at faking laughing. He, every time it closed in on that guy, he was like, and his laugh was completely appropriate for everything that was occurring. It was the perfect mix of, I'm laughing at this, and also, fuck me, I went to Tisch and I wanted to be a real actor.
I doubt anyone in this movie had any sort of formal training, but...
Well, that guy tried so hard, and he, I don't care if you guys agree with it or not, if you give the points to the apes, that's fine, but that gentleman needs to be acknowledged as the best fake laugher in this whole movie. That guy was trying, and Dom DeLuise was just cashing a paycheck, and everyone else didn't give a shit, and that guy was trying so hard at his fake laughing that I'm going to the match for this and saying that he was the best actor in this movie.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't remember him at all, though.
Well, he didn't do anything to fake laugh, so that's fair.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
And as for me, I have to go with Ben Mendelsohn, who played the boy. I loved him in Over the Top, and he had scorpions poured on his head in this movie. And he really sold the fact that he was in love with this monkey. He was scared. Like, he did really good child acting in this movie. So I'm going to have to go with humans. Sorry, Deep Roy. Sorry, Kara.
Can't win them all.
Looks like the humans win this one. To close things out, I want to do... We did this for Born to be Wild. Chris read a very stirring IMDb review of the movie. And I want to read one
I read that
I found to be really inspiring. This is from Matt Crawford from Kansas City. And the title is, Are You People Stupid? Bananas is a classic. No laughs? What about the part where Bonzo, parentheses, the monkey, is under the table and keeps snatching pieces of cake from the patrons at the restaurant? Before the waiter can set down another plate, Bonzo has devoured it.
Which, to interject, we do not actually see the monkey eat any cake. He takes the cake off the table and, like, takes it underneath the table, but we never actually see it go in his mouth.
Cut to a facial shot of Bonzo under the tablecloth covered in cake. Tell me, who could resist wetting their pants at such a thing? And the ensuing restaurant fight, where we have the joy of seeing Ben and Bonzo smash people at random with bottles. Whoever thought this movie was not funny must have been watching with their eyes closed and cotton in their ears. Just the scenes of intimacy between Ben and Bonzo that bordered on homosexual, parentheses, bestial, were enough to make the film hilarious, especially when Bonzo is trying to sing Ben back to health in the hospital. Not to mention the cruel and sadistic humor of the monkey, who is seen repeatedly hitting his friends, Ben, the boy, and others, and breaking out in insane laughter. One must see the strange and twisted side of going bananas to see the humor. So I suggest watch the movie again. Don't watch the movie again.
No.
Please don't. It is a classic. If you think of the sheer cruelty of Dom DeLuise taunting a monkey with a banana, only to let him have it if he says banana, it is hysterical. Of course, poor Dom had no idea the monkey would do it, so imagine what kind of pathetic mind state he was in. Locked in jail in Africa, and rather than prayer, diplomacy, critical thinking, whatever, instead of trying to get himself out of this dilemma, he resolves to sit back on his haunches and amuse himself by taunting a monkey with a banana. Excellent. I give Bonzo and Going Bananas 14 million stars and 763,000 thumbs way up. Bonzo for president. Bonzo loves Ben.
Whew.
Man.
To be perfectly frank, I wouldn't mind if Bonzo was running for president instead of some of the other candidates that we have this time around.
Frankly, an anthropomorphic monkey would get my vote any day of the week right about now.
Well, you know what? I don't think we've ever done breaking news on Monkey Club. Did you see that PPP polls about maybe a month ago from when we're recording this polled Harambe against all of the political candidates and polled better than Jill Stein for president of the United States?
What's good, guys? Jared here. I'm going to answer your comments and questions at the end of this video, but let's just jump into it. Anyone remember Harambe? The gorilla that was shot and killed at the Cincinnati Zoo back in May of this year after a young boy fell into his enclosure? Yeah, well, apparently he got somewhere between 11 to 15,000 votes. I mean, every vote did matter, and these people could be the reason why Trump is now president. Or maybe the people that voted for Trump and Hillary are the reason why Harambe isn't president. Anyways, guys, that's it for this video. If you liked it, give me that thumbs up, and I'll see you guys soon. Peace!
Yeah, that's not at all surprising to me.
Go monkeys.
No, there's, not at all.
There's the ultimate final tally of apes versus humans right there.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, Kara, thank you so much for joining us. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your podcast?
Sure. So I have a podcast of my own. It's called In Sickness and in Health. Do you know approximately when this is coming out, this episode?
This Friday.
Oh, okay. We'll be celebrating our first birthday at the end of this month on the 27th, so that's really exciting. On the podcast, I talk to people about their relationships with their bodies, and we discuss issues at the intersections of chronic illness, disability, healthcare, and mortality. I promise I'm a lot more fun than it sounds, and check it out at insicknesspod.com and on social media at insicknesspod.
Well, that is something that's much more important than talking about monkey movies, but I'm glad
this movie definitely made me think of my mortality.
Yeah, for sure.
And Chris, I know that you have a brand new podcast on the Cage Club Podcast Network, so why don't you tell us a little about that?
I do. Now and Again talks about nostalgia and memories via mixtapes. We take a look at the Now That's What I Call Music discography, and we use that as a jumping off point to talk about what it was like to grow up as 90s kids. Hashtag only 90s kids will get this.
Well, awesome. This has been a very enlightening conversation, and I'm very glad we had it. Kara, thank you so much for joining us. You can check out older episodes of Monkey Club on cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me. You can also check out episodes of Cage Club, Keanu Club, Now and Again, Zack Attack on the Cage Club Podcast Network. You can go on iTunes. You can like, rate, and subscribe to these wonderful podcasts. On behalf of Chris, Kara, and myself, thank you for joining us for this episode of the Monkey Club, and we'll see you next time.
Ring, 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 banana phone. Ring, 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 banana phone. I've got this feeling so appealing, for
us to get together and sing, sing. Ring, 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 banana phone. Ding, dong, ding, dong, ding, dong, ding, banana phone. It grows in bunches, I've got my hunches. It's the best, beats the rest. Cellular, modular, interactive, modular. Ring, 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 banana phone. Ping, pong, ping, pong, ping, pong, ping, banana phone. It's no baloney, it ain't a phony, my cellular, bananular phone.
We did it.
Yay. We did it. Awesome. Thank you guys so much.